Okay, I know everyone is concerned about fascism, and I am too. But today we're going to stay with the genocide. The people that are facing the genocide is, in my view, a top priority. There are 100, 100 today, 100 per day since Israel broke the truce. 100 per day have been dying. So we're going to hear David Hurst say that this cannot go on forever. And then we're going to hear from Andrew Feinstein, and he's doing a little historical review that what Israel is becoming is what Einstein feared would happen, that it could turn into a fascist state, and indeed it has turned into a fascist state. Then another piece by David Hurst about the ethnic cleansing of Gaza. This was back in February, the report. And then we'll hear some more from Francesca Albanese. I may not be pronouncing that name right. She's the UN Special Rapporteur on Palestine and the Occupied Territories. So here is David Hurst, that what Israel is up to cannot go on forever.
This is a real wake-up call to the whole world. The dream of greater Israel is within touching distance. Trump described Gaza as
Gaza is a hellhole right now. It's all death in Gaza. Nothing but death and destruction.
While the man responsible for these war crimes and wanted on an arrest warrant by the International Criminal Court was sitting 3 feet away, grinning. Trump said he would transfer 1.8 million Palestinians. I'm not sure how he comes to that figure. There are 2.3 million Palestinians in Gaza. What happens to the rest? Are they all killed?
We're talking about probably 1.7 million people, 1.7 million, maybe 1.8 million, but I think all of them, I think they'll be resettled.
This is ethnic cleansing by presidential decree.
The U.S. will take over the Gaza Strip, and we will do a job with it too. We'll own it.
And turn it into
the Riviera of the Middle East. Gaza is interesting. It's a phenomenal location. On the sea, the best weather. Some beautiful things could be done with it.
This announcement doesn't come totally out of the blue. Jared Kushner, Trump's son-in-law, has mused that Gaza would make absolutely superb Mediterranean beachfront property.
In Gaza's waterfront property, it could be very valuable from Israel's perspective. I would do my best to move the people out and then clean it up. If I was Israel right now, is I would just bulldoze something in the Negev. I would try to move people in there. I know that won't be the popular thing to do, but I think that that's a better option to do so you can go in and finish the job.
Well, we all know that Trump is being bankrolled by Zionist billionaires. We also know that he's filled his cabinet with people who just simply parrot Israel's talking points. He's appointed an ambassador, Mike Huckabee, who believes that there's no such thing as a Palestinian.
There really is no such thing as, and I have to be careful in saying this, because people will really get upset. There's really no such thing as a Palestinian.
He's appointed a defense secretary in Pete Hegseth, who says that a third temple should be built where the Al-Aqsa Mosque now is.
The declaration of Jerusalem as the capital was a miracle, and there's no reason why the miracle of the reestablishment of the temple on the Temple Mount is not possible.
For the national religious right, their dreams of greater Israel are within touching distance. Trump may dress this up as in sort of fake concern for the Palestinians.
I think they'll be resettled in areas where they can live a beautiful life and not be worried about dying every day.
Of course, they deserve to live in a decent life, but they also deserve to live in their own homes, and they also deserve to live in their own land. Who can possibly think that this is now just a fight between Israel and Hamas or Israel and Gaza? This is Israel, America, against the entire Palestinian people.
I've said this before. I'll say it again. You are the greatest friend Israel has ever had in the White House.
I'm starting to understand why Benjamin Netanyahu accepted a ceasefire deal when there was so much opposition to it at home. For Netanyahu, the sight of Hamas in pristine Toyota Jeeps and new uniforms, evidently in control of Gaza and releasing the hostages who were in good shape, was deeply, deeply humiliating. And Netanyahu obviously did not want this to go on. He's now persuaded the American president to allow him to pull the plug on any further hostage release. What incentive has he given Hamas even to continue with the current stage one ceasefire and to honour its commitments if America tears up everything negotiated. And this makes Trump's push for a ceasefire around the time of his inauguration even more cynical a gesture, because he wasn't even serious about getting the hostages back. Pledges he made to families of the hostages with whom he surrounded himself in, he used them basically as stage props for his inauguration. But you can't have a continuing hostage release and war and greater Israel at the same time. It's one or the other. And what appears to be happening is that he's thrown the hostages down a deep hole and has given Netanyahu the green light to resume total war in Gaza. Not just that, to resume total war in the West Bank with the specific purpose of mass population transfer. Taking over the Gaza Strip is something Trump forgot to mention in his 2024 presidential campaign.
I'm going to ask all of, if I could, all of my friends to come up from the Arab and Muslim part of Michigan.
We as Muslims stand with President Trump because he promises peace. He promises peace, not war.
Trump campaigned on a basis of stopping all wars. But this is not a basis for deconfliction. This is a basis for reconfliction. The penny must now have dropped that following Israel down the rabbit hole will set the entire region of the Middle East on fire. It is not a recipe for stopping wars. It is a recipe for Californian-style wildfires. It is the wind which will project devastation across a vast, tinder-dry region. It's a recipe for regional war. I cannot emphasize enough how dangerous this is for the stability of Israel's neighbors. Egypt has been quiet for all the wrong reasons under dictatorship, but it has held its border with Israel. Jordan has been quiet, very, very uneasily so. But with Israel now threatening to interfere in Syria and pursue its plan to divide it into cantons, and with its refusal to pull out of Lebanon and its annexation plans to the West Bank, this is an absolute recipe for war on all its borders and the destabilization of all of its neighbors. And there is no Arab leader now who has not now come to the same conclusion. Both Jordan and Egypt think that a population transfer of over 1 million Palestinians from Gaza, either to Egypt or to Jordan, would be an existential issue. And senior sources in Jordan have told Middle East that this would be a cause for war. This is the same country that right now allows Israeli jets and American jets to use its airspace to shoot down Iranian drones. Jordan receives $1.2 billion in US aid. But it is serious when it says that it would go to war over this. Egypt is serious when it says it cannot accept Palestinian refugees. Now, if it were down purely to the likes of President of Egypt, Sisi, I'm sure an agreement could be reached, because he and Trump are extremely dishonest and transactional leaders. However, it's not down to Sisi. It is down to the Egyptian army, who knows that how fragile the Egyptian state is after 10 years of military dictatorship. The last thing that they could contain is a huge, angry population of highly active Palestinians all trying to use Egypt as a base on which to rid the Israeli occupation forces from their homes and their land in Gaza. Gaza will have become a complete symbol of crushed Palestinian statehood. Gaza, as a piece of turf, has now become almost sacred to the Palestinian cause. It is no longer just the place where Gazan refugees from previous conflicts ended up. It has become sacred turf in its own right. You can see exactly how determined the Gazans have been to go back. 500,000 have walked back into northern Gaza to stake claim to their houses and their ruins, even though they are piles of concrete.
Netanyahu and Trump. At first, fuck you. Then, you see, this is the rubble of my house. It was destroyed by you and your arms. Do you think I will leave my home? I will leave the rubble of my home? No, I will never. I will remove the rubble with my hands and will rebuild my house with my hands. And every single Gazan will do the same as me. We will never leave our home. We will never leave our home to you.
every Palestinian, wherever he or she is, in whatever they are doing in any part of the world, will feel that this is a mortal blow to A, to their identity, and B, to their desire and their demand now for self-determination. This is an attack on every Palestinian and each Arab government who is threatened by this threat of mass population transfer should immediately stop all security cooperation with Israel as a sign that they are serious. And Trump should listen seriously to the blowback he's now going to get and the absolute maelstrom of instability that he would have kicked up with this announcement. In particular, Europe should wake up. Europe cannot stand by and watch a catastrophe in the East Mediterranean unfold, because it is the East Mediterranean. And we know what happened with a wave of 1 million Syrian refugees in Germany. It sunk Angela Merkel and it changed the politics of Germany forever. Germans should ask themselves, what will happen if 2 million Palestinians from Gaza and millions more from the West Bank start knocking on its doors and Europe's doors? This is a European disaster in the making, not just an American and Israeli one. They have got to now make statements and actually intervene and say, over our dead body, is this going to actually happen? And it's all done on the basis of lies. Netanyahu repeated the demonstrable lie that babies had been burnt alive on October the 7th.
They burnt babies alive?
Israel keeps on going back to October the 7th as the sort of moral foundation block to everything it has done in 15 months. But just judge for yourself what has happened in those 15 months. 80% of Gaza has been destroyed. At least 50,000, and probably three times that number, have been killed in Gaza. There are about 8,000 people missing. It has been October the 7th every week in Gaza ever since. And we, the international community, have just stood by and allowed this to happen.
The entire Western media has concentrated on the release of the hostages that Hamas released in good condition. No one has given any thought to the prisoners who were released by Israel, some of whom showed signs of being beaten up before their release, and they were released in very bad condition.
كيف راسه كان لما يعني يسرح الصوت لو في حدا يسمع شو بلش من صوت اللي راح جلب راسه هنا الجسم راح يعني إشي هذا كانت عذبة.
No one's commented on this. No one's commented on the continuing arrests that take place every day while Israel is conducting operations in the West Bank. And so the total number of prisoners that Israel has at any one point never really varies, because even though you have high-profile events like prisoner releases, they're constantly replenishing the stocks of prisoners day in, day out, and that is just regarded as normal life. The operation that's now going on in the West Bank suits Netanyahu. It's a gift to Bezalel Smotrich, his finance minister, and the de facto consul general of the West Bank. That is the real prize of the extreme religious right. It's the West Bank. It's what they regard as the biblical home of the Jews, and they want to annex it. And
for the national religious right, their dreams of greater Israel are within touching distance.
And Israel is doing its damnedest right now to collapse the PA in the West Bank. What's happened in Jenin has been a fight between the Palestinian security services and Jenin resistance fighters, which preceded the current Israeli operation. The PA is thus doing much, much more than simply collaborating with the invader and the occupier. It's doing their work for them, and they're working sequentially. This is designed to rob Mahmoud Abbas and Ramallah of any remaining authority that he has over the West Bank. And I think this is being done deliberately by Israel to collapse the PA. And all you have then is a series of townships, all gated, all closed by the Israeli occupiers, permanently under siege and permanently under control of Israel, who want to return to an era where they deal with hundreds of local leaders, which they divide and rule at will. That is their fundamental blueprint for a Palestine that is very, very far from being an authority and even further from being a Palestinian state. Remember that Netanyahu thinks strategically and that his legacy will be to have killed a Palestinian state before it could even be born. And that is what he's aiming at now in the West Bank and what the ruins of Gaza could allow him to do. Impunity that Israel has enjoyed carries on and will carry on with bells on under the Trump administration. But it's no longer about now what Israel can get away with. It's about the big forces that will change the course of the war are the forces within Israel itself, the loss of faith, the loss of ability just to keep on fighting. A majority is in favor of the ceasefire and of stopping a war, not out of any moral qualms for the Palestinians. 62% of Israel still believes that there are no such thing as an innocent Palestinian in Gaza. So it's not out of moral qualms, it's out of war fatigue. And regional forces as well. I'm not talking about the regional forces of governments, but of their population. The Sunni Arab world has been energized in a way which has not been seen for decades. In a sense, it was their passivity that allowed Israel to get away with murder every single day on the West Bank and not even mention it in their news bulletins. That was the situation in 2017 when Trump took over. Trump 1.0 took over when the Palestinian cause was all but dead and buried. Everyone's talking about money, normalization, new projects, a train line that would have gone all the way from Saudi Arabia to Haifa. All of these possibilities. And the Palestinians were Gastarbeiter. They were movable pieces. They didn't have statehood. They didn't have a land. They could have their enclave on the desert. If you look at Trump's plan for Palestine, his map, as published in his Deal of the Century, it's of various enclaves which are totally split up. No contiguous land, some industrial park in the Negev Desert. That's the most that they could aspire to. Not East Jerusalem, nothing. That was the situation in 2015. Now compare that to the situation now, where everyone is literally up in arms. And you have, especially in countries which are pro-Israel and which have signed a normalization deal, like Morocco, you have a Moroccan with a US green card getting up and stabbing and injuring seriously Israelis in Tel Aviv. Now, I'm not praising that. As a commentator, it is noteworthy that a Moroccan does this. And that is why Israel is so wrong to think in terms of normalization with governments, when the hatred that they have engendered and up-and-coming Moroccans is there to be seen. Really, we should be thinking, and they should be thinking, about what they're doing in this war and how long they can carry maintaining this level of maximum force and maximum destruction. Israel is only prevailing by literally leveling all the neighborhoods around it, and it cannot carry on like that. It simply cannot exist as an armed state which levels southern Lebanon, levels Gaza, levels the West Bank, and occupies now a larger chunk of Syria than it is occupying in Gaza. It cannot exist by this policy of maximum force because the Arab world and its neighbours have a memory and they will get these lands back. It won't necessarily be tomorrow, but they will get these lands back. And this is not peace that is being established. It's laying the foundations for a regional war. And 76 years after this first started, one thing is for certain, the Palestinians are going nowhere. This period of history underlines the importance of independent media like the Middle East Eye and Double Down News as never before. Please keep on reading us and following us. These are the organizations that will stay with the story and will not abandon it and will inform you better than anyone else will. Support Double Down News on Patreon and please read Middle East Eye.
Today, Israel is sleepwalking into fascism, and it is not and should not be controversial to say so. The question that raises itself is whether Israel has a Jewish supremacy problem. We've always spoken about Jewish self-determination in the context of the state of Israel, but we are now at the point where Jewish supremacy in the state of Israel is determining the nature and functioning of the Israeli state. Former Prime Minister Ehud Barak has said this government shows signs of fascism. The mayor of Tel Aviv has warned that Israel is headed towards a fascist theocracy. And Israel's leading newspaper is publishing editorials expressing concern about what they've called Israel sleepwalking into Jewish fascism. It's official now. Fascism is us. So let's take a closer look at some of the people who constitute this new Israeli government. Bezalel Smotrich of Religious Zionism is the finance minister and minister in the defense ministry who lives in an illegal settlement. Smotrich is a notorious racist and a Jewish ultranationalist. He describes himself quite proudly as a fascist homophobe. Then there's Ben-Gvir of Jewish Power, previously convicted in Israel of incitement to racism and supporting a terrorist organization. Ben-Gvir lives in an illegal settlement in Hebron. Ben-Gvir's mentor, Rabbi Meir Kahani, established the Kach movement.
This is our country, it is not theirs. I want the Arabs out.
They must go.
He was committed to the use of specifically Jewish violence to affect such changes.
If I were the Minister of Defense, there wouldn't be one Arab left here.
Are you encouraging your people to go out on the streets and to attack Arabs as has happened in...
I call upon the Jews to do anything imaginable and anything possible which will encourage the Arabs to get out of this country.
Does that mean attacking?
Anything possible.
I want them out alive, and if not alive, dead.
Kahani's views were so extreme that the U.S. classified Kach as a terrorist organization in 1997. And Kahani was the inspiration for Baruch Goldstein, another settler from the Hebron settlements who murdered over 20 innocent Palestinians in cold blood.
Goldstein's portrait still hangs in Hebron on the wall of Itamar Ben-Gvir.
Ben-Gvir is now in charge of the police in the occupied territories. Orit Strock of the Religious Zionism Party is the National Missions Minister. She is yet another leading member of the settler community in Hebron. She said doctors shouldn't be required to treat patients when it contradicts their religious beliefs. This is like a cabinet going back to the Dark Ages, a government of settlers. Settlers who live on illegal settlements across the occupied Palestinian territories. And it is explicit government policy that Greater Israel, which includes the Palestinian territories, belong to Jewish Israelis. The idea of Palestinian territories, of a Palestinian homeland, is total anathema to this Israeli government. As early as 1948, some of the world's greatest Jewish thinkers were already asking questions about Israel and the specter of fascism. In a letter written by Albert Einstein, Hannah Arendt, author of the extraordinary book The Origins of Totalitarianism, and 26 other prominent Jewish intellectuals in the New York Times on the 2nd of December 1948, they describe Menachem Begin's political party Herut as a political party closely akin in its organization, methods, political philosophy, and social appeal to the Nazi and fascist parties. The letter specifically warned, today they speak of freedom, democracy, whereas until recently they openly preached the doctrine of the fascist state. From its past actions, we can judge what it may be expected to do in the future. Herut was the main right-wing party in Israel from 1948 until 1973, when it merged with other right-wing parties to create Likud. In 1993, Benjamin Netanyahu became leader of Likud. As Likud leader, Benjamin Netanyahu demonized the then Israeli Prime Minister and Labour Party leader Yitzhak Rabin for signing the Oslo Peace Accords. In 1995, Ben-Gvir the Minister for National Security, responsible for the police today, appeared on television brandishing an ornament stolen from Rabin's car and proudly declared, "We got to his car, we'll get to him too." A few weeks later, Rabin was assassinated. The death of Rabin led to the death of the peace process. In 1996, Benjamin Netanyahu became Israeli Prime Minister for the first time. And what he set about doing was the creation of a whole new generation of far-right extremist political leaders in Israel. Despite constant scandal, Netanyahu has been re-elected Prime Minister on 6 occasions. In 2023, Netanyahu presides over the most right-wing Israeli government in history. Einstein was a Zionist. He was supportive of the creation of the State of Israel. But he was, as he expressed in that New York Times letter, deeply concerned about the sort of country that Israel could become. And it was up to its leaders as to whether it was going to become a democratic, tolerant nation or whether it was going to descend into dark fascism and totalitarianism. Israel is at best a partial democracy, but Jewish Israelis do have full democratic rights within the State of Israel. Benjamin Netanyahu's overhaul of the justice system, of which he describes himself as a victim, will fatally undermine even that democracy in Israel. Justice Minister Levin proposes curbing the powers of the judiciary, including allowing members of parliament to enact laws that the High Court has struck down. Levin also laid out a law that would empower the country's 120-person Knesset to override Supreme Court decisions with a simple majority of 61 votes. The obvious thought that arises is whether Israel's decades of illegal practices against the Palestinian people are now coming home to roost. Whether Netanyahu and the country's most right-wing government in its history are taking the sum total of those decades of oppression, brutality, and illegality and starting to apply it to Israel's own partial democracy. And it reminds me that my old friend Archbishop Tutu spoke in the South African and the Israeli context of how oppression not only destroys the oppressed, but it corrodes and ultimately destroys the oppressor too. I'm Jewish. I'm the son of a Holocaust survivor who survived the war in Vienna, hidden in a cellar for 3.5 years. She lost dozens of her own family at Auschwitz and Theresienstadt, and I grew up very much with the knowledge of the real consequences of racism. In addition to which, as a South African committed to non-racism in the country of apartheid, I became very involved with the ANC from quite a young age. I then landed up serving as an ANC Member of Parliament under Nelson Mandela. I was invited to speak at Auschwitz by the Auschwitz Institute, and I introduced the first ever motion in the history of the South African Parliament on the Holocaust. As the son of a Holocaust survivor, as someone who was born in a racist apartheid state and struggled against that state, my actions are driven by my Judaism, of which I am incredibly proud. For that to be encapsulated in the actions of a 70-plus-year-old state that doesn't represent me is appalling and abhorrent. If my family history of genocide has taught me anything, if my years struggling against apartheid in South Africa taught me anything, it is to always speak out in the face of injustice, regardless of who that injustice is committed by and who it is committed against. And today, we have a responsibility to call the state of Israel as it is becoming, a fascist state. Given the importance of global conversations about peace, about racism, there has never been a time when independent media is more important. So watch Double Down News and support Double Down News on Patreon.
Former US President Joe Biden was rightly called out for making the US the quartermaster general for Israel's genocidal campaign in Gaza. But Biden did more than enable a war to continue for 15 months. He laid the foundation for something much worse to follow, a projected population transfer on a scale that would dwarf the Nakba of 1948-67 and the deportations that have carried on every month since then. Many of those Arab Americans who voted for Trump in the swing states were lulled into thinking that after the horrors of Biden in Gaza, Trump could only do better. After all, had not Trump surrounded himself with the families of the hostages at his inauguration last month? And wasn't it the case that Steve Witkoff, his envoy, pushed the ceasefire deal over the line? So wasn't Trump committed to a ceasefire? How wrong they all were. No one took Trump seriously when he mused in his past about turning Gaza into the Riviera of the Eastern Mediterranean. Everyone had ignored the son-in-law, Jared Kushner, when at the height of the killing, he had mused about all that valuable waterfront property. But both men were deadly earnest. After just one meeting with Netanyahu, the real estate developer in chief had pledged to take Gaza over as US property to turn a demolition site into paradise. He said he would develop it for the people of the Middle East. In other words, for Israeli settlers too. Sitting 3 feet away, the man who had demolished Gaza could not contain his smiles. Trump had just given him everything that even Biden's instinctive Zionism could not do. Netanyahu leaves Washington with a clear mandate. It is not, as we all thought, to stop the war, but to urge him back to it. This is the inevitable consequence of Trump's words, if he follows through on what he said. The humiliation of all those hostage releases with Hamas fighters in new uniforms and untouched white jeeps firmly in control, all that is behind the Israeli leader now. And so too have the considerable military and political forces of the extreme religious right in Israel fallen into line. The rush of Itamar Ben-Gvir, former national security minister and de facto leader of the religious Zionist right, to rejoin the Israeli cabinet in the wake of Trump's news conference spoke volumes. Ben-Gvir said that if Trump started to implement his plan, his party would rejoin the coalition. Never before has the dream of a lifetime, the dream of greater Israel extending from the river to the sea, been within touching distance for them. Trump said and did much more besides. In one day, he swung a wrecking ball at the ceasefire deal that had been painfully constructed over the course of 15 months of war. Not only did he unilaterally abrogate stage 3, which envisages the return of all dead bodies and the full withdrawal of Israeli forces from Gaza, but he also threw into severe doubt stage 2, wherein all the remaining living hostages were to be released. Trump has said he was not confident about the Gaza ceasefire long-term prospects. And on Tuesday, Witkoff confirmed that while the administration was hopeful about stage 2, stage 3 was off the table. So tell me, what incentive now exists for Hamas to carry on releasing hostages, even under the current phase of the deal? We're only about halfway through stage 1 of the deal, which provides for the release of 33 hostages in exchange for hundreds of Palestinian prisoners. Why would Hamas continue to release any more hostages, knowing that obliteration for them will follow? What worth can anyone put now on the documents that the US signs anymore? This is the clear implication of the reaction of Bassem Naim, a member of Hamas's political bureau. He said Hamas was committed to the ceasefire deal as long as Israel was, but any manipulation in implementing the agreement may cause it to collapse, he said. We also do not know what Netanyahu has planted in Trump's mind about the occupied West Bank, but the signs here are ominous. Asked whether Trump backed Israeli sovereignty over Judea and Samaria, which means annexation of areas B and C, comprising more than two-thirds of the illegally occupied West Bank, Trump had warm words. People do like the idea, he said, but we haven't taken a position on it yet. But we will be. We'll be making an announcement, probably on that very specific topic, over the next 4 weeks. It's now obvious that Gaza is no longer about a fight between one Palestinian resistance group and Israel. It is no longer even about Gaza. The concept of large population transfer of Palestinians has suddenly become normalized in Israel. The left and centre both talk today about Trump's plans, as if they were done out of some sort of humanitarian concern for the people of Gaza. Netanyahu returns from Washington with a new lease of political life. The extreme right are eating out of his hands, wanting once again to rejoin his coalition. But for the rest of us, and for Europe in particular, the fig leaf really now has fallen off this 15-month war. It was never just about the return of the hostages or collapsing Hamas. Industrial-scale destruction and killing on a scale not seen since the Second World War was clearly done for the purpose of forcing the population of Gaza out of Palestine, a crime in international law that Trump has just given the green light to. Perhaps European leaders are at last realizing how stupid and lame it was of them to back Israel to the hilt in this war against Gaza, and where this policy now leads them. All this is happening on Europe's doorstep in the eastern Mediterranean. If the arrival of 1 million Syrians doomed former Chancellor Angela Merkel's centre-right government in Germany and ushered in a new period of history where the extreme right once again threatened democracy, what would millions of Palestinians do to the peace of fortress Europe? Because one thing is for sure, neither Jordan nor Egypt will allow themselves to be strong-armed by Trump into accepting a mass exodus of Palestinians. Within hours of Trump saying Saudi Arabia is going to be very helpful, and they have been very helpful. They want peace in the Middle East. It's very simple. The kingdom issued its strongest statement yet. It said, the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia also reaffirms its unequivocal rejection of any infringement on the illegitimate rights of the Palestinian people, whether through Israeli settlement policies, land annexation, or attempts to displace the Palestinian people from their land. It described its position as non-negotiable. This is the strongest, and in my memory, the quickest reaction the kingdom has made to an announcement by a US president in living memory. King Abdullah of Jordan is about to arrive in Washington with a similar message. According to senior sources who spoke with Middle East Eye in Jordan, Jordan would consider Israel's opening its eastern border and forcing through a mass exodus of Palestinians from the occupied West Bank as a casus belli, a cause for war. Jordan is being clear-sighted on this. Many major wars have started on smaller pretexts. Jordan receives $1.45 billion in US aid and military assistance annually, and MEE understands it is willing to forego that crucial aid if the price of continued financial assistance is accepting millions more Palestinian refugees. The Egyptian army is equally determined not to accept a single Palestinian who has been forced out of Gaza. We have now reached a stage in this conflict where the war aims of Israel and the religious Zionist right backers of Trump are laid bare. There are no fig leaves to hide behind. It can no longer be called a war to defend Israel, if it ever could have been. It's no longer about defeating Hamas. The clear stated objective of this war is to force a mass transfer of the Palestinian population from Gaza and the occupied West Bank. It is to deal a terminal blow to the Palestinian statehood and alter the demographic balance of the land that Israel claims is theirs for good. Israel might call this voluntary transfer. Trump and Kushner might call it redevelopment, but it cannot be called anything other than its real name. Ethnic cleansing on a scale unseen since Nazi-occupied Europe. Every Palestinian understands this, and for this reason, they will not move. The world can now be confident that if this war resumes in Gaza, Palestinians will die where they stand. What Trump proposed on Tuesday has been attempted by Israel several times before. Zionist militias tried to force Palestinians out of Gaza in 1948. Israel tried again during the Suez Crisis and after the 1967 war. It failed each time and it will fail again. Netanyahu finished his news conference by saying, "Today the roar of the Lion of Judah is heard loudly throughout the Middle East." He's blinded by his own arrogance. If this is not stopped, the lions of the Middle East are about to descend on the small state of Israel as never before, and every Israeli will feel it.
What's happening in Gaza is the shame of the century. Gaza has been erased. There is almost nothing left other than the despair of people who continue to perish there. Look at the acts of torture. Look at who's been killed. Doctors, nurses, students, mothers, children. 17,000 children. To look at what the soldiers have done and said, and then have the courage to say that this is not genocide. This genocide would have not been possible without the shocking cover-up by the media. the role that corporate media played in justifying crimes, in spreading misinformation, like the 40 beheaded babies.
We have some really disturbing new information out of Israel. The Israeli Prime Minister's spokesman just confirmed babies and toddlers were found with their heads decapitated in Kfar Aza in southern Israel after Hamas attacks in the kibbutz over the weekend.
The basic ethical principles governing their profession.
I choked up earlier reading this new revelation about 40 babies being killed.
Oh my God.
And some of them being beheaded. And I was like, how can any human being do that to a baby?
The role of international media, of Western media in acting in defense of the acts of a genocidal state. This is unprecedented, but it's also revealing of the global situation we are facing, the fact that this is not just the genocide of the Palestinians committed by Israel. A number of Western countries are complicit, and so this is an opportunity to interrogate the system we live in, the checks and balances we have as a global community, how people in the West trying to stop the genocide have been repressed. There is momentum and goodwill to make a change, and people feel at loss because they look at their politicians who are in bad faith, especially those who claim to be human rights lawyers.
A siege is appropriate. Cutting off power, cutting off water, Sakir?
Well, I think that Israel does have that right.
They know that you cannot advocate for starvation. They know that you cannot doubt that a genocide is ongoing when the International Court of Justice has recognized the plausibility of genocide. You should act upon the recognition of that plausibility.
I'm well aware of the definition of genocide, and that is why I've never described this and referred to it as genocide.
This genocide is also the consequence of the enduring impunity that Israel has been granted since its foundation. Israel has been allowed to violate hundreds of UN resolutions. And this is the result. A state that behaves as if it was above the law, and the state that becomes repressive against those who are trying to hold it accountable. Let me be clear. I have nothing against the state of Israel. The state of Israel is a recognized member of the United Nations, and because of this, I've always respectfully, since the beginning of my mandate, trying to engage with the state of Israel. However, I cannot tolerate that the only modus operandi and the only way of existing of this state is by dispossessing, oppressing, and repressing another people. If the only way of Israel to exist is by being an apartheid state, well, we have a problem here. And this is where the conflict is. And Israel could be led by Buddhist, atheist, Muslim, Christians. It wouldn't change. The problem is not with the religious underpinning that Israel maintains. It's with the abhorrent human rights records that Israel has. This protracted impunity of Israel, including in the face of clearly war crimes, crimes against humanity, and plausibly genocide, should have been followed by critical measures taken by the UN Security Council, the General Assembly, lacking which member states should have acted upon their own obligation under international law, not to aid and assist a state which is committing atrocities, a state that maintains an unlawful occupation which is to be dismantled totally and unconditionally by September 2025, according to the General Assembly. In the face of all this, what remains of the international legal system? So we are at a critical juncture. We still have the possibility to step back from the precipice we are staring at. But we need to act in order to change that pattern of lack of accountability. This is why I think that it's important that where democracies or quasi-democracies still exist, ordinary citizens, people from all paths of life, make their voice heard to change the political will, to hold our politicians accountable, our institutions accountable, to make sure that, for example, in the UK, you have citizens who are fighting in the Israeli army. You have UK citizens who live in the settlements. How it's possible? These people should be held accountable. British banks, pension funds, and businesses who profit from and trade with the illegal occupation. It's time to hold people accountable. The reason why I have recommended the suspension of Israel's credentials as a member of the United Nations is not even because of the genocide. It's not even because of the apartheid. It's because of the assault that Israel has launched against the United Nations in the past 13 months. It started with a prohibition of the United Nations to have humanitarian aid entering and delivered to the Palestinians in Gaza. And then it continued with the assault on UN premises in Gaza. 70% of them have been severely damaged and in certain cases destroyed. 237 UN staff members have been killed in Gaza alone. UN peacekeepers have been attacked, and they continue to be attacked in Lebanon. And there has been an entire smear campaign against the United Nations, starting with UNRWA, and then the Secretary General, who's been declared persona non grata, together with myself, and the General Assembly, and the Human Rights Council, the International Criminal Court. Every one of us has been accused either of being anti-Semite or supporting terrorism, or both. And recently, Israel even passed a law that prevents UNRWA from operating in Israel, which means inability to enter the occupied Palestinian territory. What is this? I mean, this is such an incredibly negative precedent that is going to give carte blanche to destroy the UN wherever they are. But I do think that No one has the hubris that has grown into Israel's veins because of 75 years of impunity that the United Nations have granted to this state. What is striking is the lack of empathy. If you cannot empathize with the Palestinians who have been killed in dozens of thousands and been maimed, their homes have been destroyed, there is nothing to return to, and they've lived for 1 year under constant bombing, moving from one place to another, really on survival mode. How cannot we empathize with them, with their tragedy? This speaks to our racism. The double standard, the selective moral outrage, the selective indignation that we harbor is a reflex and is a function of how we have a hierarchy. Certain lives are more worthy than others. Clearly, the Palestinians do not rank very high. For many, it's dehumanization that leads to the commission of these atrocities and thus justified the erasure of Gaza, the killing of Palestinians, including children, and even the torture and rape. This is one case in which we cannot miss the genocidal intent, which must be attributed to the state and its totality of conduct, its totality of crimes against the totality of the Palestinian in the totality of the land that Israel occupies. I like to remember the words of Primo Levi, a Holocaust survivor who took his life because he couldn't survive the apathy of the world he found out of the concentration camps. And he said, "Monsters are few. Atrocities happen because of the indifference of the many who do not ask questions. Ordinary bureaucrats, ordinary citizens who look the other way around. This has happened during the Holocaust of the Jews. This has happened during the Rwanda genocide, during the Bosnia-Herzegovina genocide. It's more shocking now because with the international framework of human rights norms we have, there should be prevention. And even more shocking now because everything is televised. This is where we are. I hope that this is the last genocide of human history. It could be. If we were only able to understand the critical juncture we are at, to take this moment as an opportunity to learn from the past, to see the past into the present, to understand the warning that was given by Holocaust survivors. Never forget the past, because the forgotten past risks to become a new present. And this is what has happened in many respects. But also knowing that the international legal framework is not ineffective per se, is rendered ineffective by the lack of political will, which is a function of political connivance and interests. It's in our interest as a people, we the people, to make international law not just a promise, but a reality, because we will miss it very much, especially us in the West. when human rights will be entirely eroded. In some time, in the coming future, I cannot predict in how long, we will have to come to terms with the fact that we will not be able to say that we didn't know, because this have been a live-streamed 24/7 genocide. We knew in real time what was happening, why it was happening, the excuses that were made by the media and politicians in Israel and beyond across the West. We will have to come to terms with our own conscience. And I think there will be a lot of regrets. But because of that, I say, let's act now to stop the genocide.